Welcome to Twin Week, Season 3, Episode 28. It's August 26th. Decky Swan Dive, how are we?
Oh my God, Andy Soothsayer, we're having a blast. It is, I cannot emphasize it enough, Twin Week. We stumbled into this thing. We had two different sets of twins who are doing absolutely phenomenal stuff, and we're dropping them this week for you. We'll start with this one, the Brodsky Twins. Some call them the Brodskys, but we get to call them the Brodskys. They work in the cinematography area and industry, I should say. Sam is the brains, the organizer, the producer, and Ben is the chiller, creative BTS guy. And their dynamic left right brain is phenomenal. You guys are gonna love it.
I can't wait for you guys to try to decipher who's who. We got four people on the mic. It's gonna be a hell of a time for our listeners to try to figure out which voice is going to which person. So enjoy. We try to do our best to vocalize a little bit of inflection to decipher the differences.
I think we did a good job.
We did fine.
But honestly, it doesn't matter if we think we did a good job. It matters if you think we did a good job. So enjoy. I'm just an ordinary average guy. My friends are boring, and so am I. We're just ordinary average guys.
Welcome to Twin Week. We got the Brodsky brothers in. Sam and Ben, how we doing today?
Doing well. Amazing. Just getting this mic. Just getting it close to my pop.
There you go, dude. So we're gonna have to figure this out. You know, Twin Week on podcasting is not easy. We got to figure out who's who. So who's who here?
Well, we could tell you, like,
I don't know. Do we get a secret?
Because these guys sound exactly the same.
So this is what we said to the impromptu girls who are coming on tomorrow. We're like, we need some vocal cues that are going to identify for the listeners, hey, this is Sam every time, and this is Ben every time. So is there anything you feel like and there's a twang in the back of your throat that, like, just comes out?
Let me quick throw a filter on.
You can just be the pop guy.
Don't you have a transition pack?
Yeah,
it's my turn.
Also, I guess this might be the time to say it then. Just, hey, watch on YouTube. That'll be the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, get the visuals.
Yeah. Either way, I mean, it's the Brodsky twins. We can just say that. Is it Brodsky or Brodsky?
Both.
It's Brodsky, but coming from you, we like Brodsky. It just sounds cooler. It
sounds so sounds cool. Cooler, yeah. It makes people like stop in their tracks. Like, what? Okay. I'm all in on that. Yeah. But we know a lot about you guys, and it's been fun to watch you guys create some content. Just be the guiding light, I want to say, from Minneapolis and Twin Cities around here. I want to know, or for our listeners, I'd love to get kind of the background of your story of like how you guys came up and how you guys have found all this success.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, first off, this is Sam Brodsky here, also known as Sam Brodsky. and so jumping right in, I guess when we started, so my brother Ben started way before me. I came in a little bit late, later in the game, and I think it was junior year of college. And we were doing a music video, and it was for Ben's class, and I was in marketing and entrepreneurship. I worked at two startup companies, wasn't in the film world, but it was junior year, I believe. And he was like, hey, like, we need help on this music video. And I was like, yeah, sure, like, I'll help out and organize, because I had a very like organized background.
You seem like an organized guy.
I like to think so.
You're wearing a collared shirt today.
Picks up for my Slack.
Well, we can talk later about the twin thing and left and right brain and whatnot.
Sure.
But I'm definitely on the organized side. So I just kind of, you know, focused on the locations, organizing, you know, 15, 20 people for this music video. Not really knowing, like, what I was doing. Not really understanding, like, what the role of a producer was. But I really was producing, per se. And I really was good at it and enjoyed it. And that was kind of the first like taste of it. Now, I had watched since Ben was very young. I had watched him be in the film world and photo world, but I wasn't like directly involved with it. But this was my like first real exposure working with big teams, and a lot of actually big talent were on that crew. And that was junior year, so that was like, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah,
5 years.
About 6 years.
And so that was my, like, first exposure to it. It goes deeper, but I'm going to let Ben answer when he got started, because I think he's got a better backstory.
You're the videographer?
I'll introduce myself here. Ben Broski as well.
This is such a formal podcast.
Yeah, well, wow. I mean, it's giving you the sauce, right? So, for me, I mean, the story is really just kind of ingrained in, you know, just how I grew up. You know, we went to a Waldorf school, you know, out of the womb. You know, it's basically what's different about Waldorf schooling is it's hands-on, no TV time, no screens, doesn't pay attention to competition. It's more a, you know, figure out what comes natural and then kind of, you know, focus on that rather than, you know, let's put you in this category. You know, it doesn't categorize the humans. It's just do what feels natural. So, I mean, for me, this whole kind of hands-on learning and being creative is like, you know, been since day one. However, getting more into the technical side of it, you know, I think the first time I really stepped into the film world was, you know, my dad had all the little toys, you know, the first digital camera, you know, he's just bored, you know, and, you know, he would just get that stuff. And so,
when was that, Ben?
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, 2000, I can't put a date to it. It's like 2010 or earlier, 2008 probably. So actually let's go even further back. So like he had a VHS, you know, whatever camera, and he would have that laying around, and the show that we watched, we were allowed to watch Disney Channel. Was it? And
only Disney Channel.
Not
Nick. About it. I think that was it. I mean, this is like way back. I mean, I barely remember this stuff. And it was Sweet Life of Zach and Cody. We were twins. It was acceptable to watch that. So
that's what my parents liked.
You know, well, what's interesting here now is I tried to, you know, TV's off now. Now we're wandering around the house, dunking hoops, playing, you know, XYZ games. I wanted to, you know, let's make Zach and Cody. And so I picked up the VHS camera. You know, I don't even think I figured out how to turn it on at that point, but I think I did get maybe one roll off, but then I came to realization that, you know, editing, like, how was I going to, like, edit it? And at that time, you know, like, computers were not advanced. They weren't what they are now. And, you know, after that, I, like, set the camera down, and that was it for, like, man, another 3-4 years went by. And then GoPro. Actually, I'm a little off right now. I actually started out with more photo in between that. So I went photo, and then GoPro came out with their stuff, and I was just like, whoa, action sports. You know, this is like 2013. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, from there it was, I mean, man, there's so many different avenues I could go into here. I haven't been in depth like this in a while. But yeah, so it was 2013 GoPro Hero 2 or 3, and I got that. You know, snowboarding was huge. That was like all we did kind of in the free time. So, you know, would watch the Burton videos on the very first YouTube back then, and just got a lot of inspiration from that. Then from there, you know, Canon started to come out with new stuff, T4Is, all the small DSLR revolution started to happen. And then from there, I actually, if we're going real technical here, I went to 5D. I actually went away from video for like a year. And then I picked up a VG20, Sony, first 1080p, 60 frames per second camera, like big deal back then. And let's see, from there it was then I got the 60, first full frame camera. Then from there it was the Sony A7S, low light beast, 2015. The whole world flipped upside down.
I think that's something that we have right here. That's an A7, but I don't think it has any of the additional features on it. It's from like 4 years ago.
A7S1, I mean, that thing is still powerhouse.
Yeah, why don't you talk a little bit about like the Instagram accounts that you started at a young age? Because I think some of our audience probably doesn't understand tech as much as you do.
Yeah, no, I can go tech. I mean, that's what editing's for. We're going to edit this. Hey, we're going to chop out that technical part. No. GoPro for me was a huge kind of introduction to Instagram and the power of like community and whatnot. I grew 3 GoPro accounts. Well, not 3 all at the same time. One at a time to 10,000 followers in 2000, like 2014, 2000, oh, yeah, like 13, way back. You know.
So and, they were just like videos that you were taking and posting.
Yeah, no, I was editing. I was shooting and editing for Instagram videos before anyone. I mean, my biggest video on YouTube was how to upload videos to Instagram because it was so pre-airdrop, pre-everything pretty much.
Yeah.
So the only way to get videos onto your camera roll was to sync it through iTunes. So I had a video demonstrating how to do this. And I mean, it's my most popular video. So that just shows you, like, you know, it puts into spectrum, like, how long ago I was, like, active on Instagram and, like, using it for business, so to speak.
And that's crazy. In the video world.
Yeah, in the video world. Yeah, that's a pretty solid one. But, yeah, fast forwarding, you know, to now, it's very interesting to see how it's changed. I mean, what started out as a very, like, for fun type platform has turned into, like, a monster of, you know, money, just everyone, you know, influencers, all that. I mean, we all know it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for me, it's been a really interesting arch, like how it's kind of come.
That's interesting, man, because you talk about like you touched on the twin dynamic, Sam, and I think it's interesting that like you're more like the business side, the entrepreneur, stay organized, and then Ben is entirely like creative, has the secret sauce to editing all these footy and like being that like B-roll BTS guy, like you really have to be on your camera like at all times. Yeah. So it's fun to see like that active dynamic. When was like the first time you guys worked together and you're like, okay, this, I mean, after that music video, I mean, you talked about that, but was that really the first time where it was like, okay, let's turn this into something special?
Yeah. I mean, it was where I had a real like active role and heart into it. I was, you know, it was really my first experience working with a larger crew, and it was also cool to see it win awards as well.
Yeah, I mean, that music video, you know, it required pre-production and a lot of, you know, today's projects, not what we currently do, but current generation kids, you know, it's called running and gunning. They just shoot anything that moves and then bring it into post.
And see,
you know,
what happens.
Bring it into post, so. See what happens. So that project, that was about, 2015, you know, it really got us thinking like, oh, we had to, you know, get these locations scouted before, we had to get the gear rented before, we, you know, we had to make sure, you know, even his outfits were washed. We had, you know, just all the little things that, you know, you're not running and gunning. It's, you know, takes time.
Yeah. But to go back on what was like a first big project also, or another project that we worked on together, was Ben started doing a project his freshman year, kind of documenting the 4-year life of the University of Kansas, what it was like to go through a 4-year degree at KU, University of Kansas. And he started that freshman year and then started documenting the life, knowing that
at the end of the road,
he would put together a, you know, 4 to 5 minute piece about it. And I wasn't involved the first 2-3 years. And then the senior year at the end, things started to come to the post-production process, which was trying to, you know, shape the vision of like how we wanted to. I stepped in a little bit, but there was a writer involved in that project that also helped a ton. Really? And that was, I would say, our real like big aha moment that we can like do this. And we can like really like create a production company, and we don't have to like necessarily go be a production assistant on some big set in LA. It was that video when it launched, it had, you know, 1 million impressions or 4,000 shares organically, had more views than the university itself for all the last year's worth of content. And we're just seniors in college, you know, with a couple cameras.
Yeah, I mean, equipment. I had been kind of, you know, every dollar I made was just towards equipment.
Every penny, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every penny.
What kind of perfect timing, though, is that with it being the end of your college career to kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel and be like, all right, we're graduating. Let's do this thing together and let's move in. So you guys, at the end of Kansas, you guys moved back up to the Twin Cities, got an apartment together, and then been running your production team ever since.
Yep. Exactly. And, you know, we had done projects in senior year that were like not big, but like were pretty cool, and they were impactful for the businesses. We worked for like the largest private apartment complex and did some branding videos for them. The problem that they had is they just weren't filling their place, and we came in and said, well, yeah, because you're not looking and feeling cool, man. And that's exactly where we came in, helped them out a ton. I think they had like four floors were empty, and by the end, I think, you know, they did well.
It should have, sure. Yeah, did well.
So we were still doing projects in college, but yeah, after
I was doing a lot of just, I mean, there were a lot of projects I was doing, but weren't like necessarily professional, like, you know, I have a whole history of this company called I'm Schmacked. You know, it was a group of a bunch of filmers that essentially showed off college campuses.
You were a part of that?
Oh, yeah. One of the OGs for sure.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I could go on to that for hours. But
what was the how many people were part of that team?
I mean, it's in and out. I mean, in total, there were a lot of filmers that were kind of one-offs, you know, they were part of their own campus. There were very few filmers that were actually in with the higher guys and actually getting flown around and actually, you know, doing stuff for them more than often. And I still to this day I'm buddies with the lead editor that was pretty much in charge of, he made the whole thing kind of happen.
Wow.
There are some other people that, you know, I won't say names that are not good people, but anyways, yeah, so that whole sure. company and that kind of, it gave me the hype and gave me that drive to, like, I'm really striving for something. And so, yeah, that was huge. That was 2013 through, I mean, that was all 4 years. Actually, funny story about that is one of the main guys that kind of ran the whole thing, he actually came and visited my school my freshman year. And at the time, I had nothing. I maybe had like a T4i, but nothing that looked good. Nothing that was like a big shoulder rig or anything like that. So I actually went to the journalism school and like pretended to be a journalist and like rented out, you know, and they're like bigger, like, you know, it's still clunky, but yeah. It looked bigger. And I'll never forget. I don't think I actually rented it because of I'm Schmack coming through town. But I was just so passionate at that time that I was just like renting cameras just to like have a big camera in my room kind of thing to like play with all the buttons. But I'm Schmacked actually came through the town that day, and I'll never forget, I was walking around campus and someone was like, oh, are you I'm Schmacked? And I was like, wait, what is that? And then I figured it out like very soon after that. And this was kind of in this golden phase, you know, like right 2014, 15, yeah. That's when it was big. But yeah, wow, that was crazy. That was really crazy.
Dude, you're shooting film underage for that stuff too? That's wild.
I was like 18, 19. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
But I'm going back and watching
Unch Mac videos after this.
Dude. I'll send you some links, the ones I did.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll actually send you a photo. I have a photo of me. I took a selfie in the mirror with that camera, middle of winter, 30 degrees out, carrying that camera. I will find that. We'll place that right
you had
here.
A fisheye on it. I actually remember
that was snowboarding. We'll have a little photo gallery.
But so taking us forward, yep. Like I think we were right where we graduated. Mm-hmm. So my background was throughout college. I worked at a couple of startup companies. One was pretty successful, the other one I'm not sure where it is today. But I had been in entrepreneurship on the track, and that's what I graduated with, marketing entrepreneurship. So I built like business plans and whatnot. So senior year, when we kind of knew that this is like what we were going to do, I leveraged a lot of my classes, built a production company, a business model around having a production company instead of doing like some, you know, frisbee company that's made out of recyclable plastic. I built a production company, leveraged that, you know, having to build something to get an A, right, to graduate. So that helped me right when I graduated because I applied for a grant that was successful. It took 6 months to get, but that got us a lot of startup capital. We're able to double our equipment. Really? Gave us that ability to kind of compete where others can't compete just because of sheer
production
equipment.
Value. That's crazy.
Yeah, so that helped out a lot. And then, but since then, like we've been just working with small to large businesses, around the country, And wow. and we love it. We love telling stories.
That's sick.
We do a lot of event work as well. A little bit of nonprofit work, commercial. We really like branded content is one of our big things.
So with that, when you say like you love telling the stories, is there a specific way or style that you guys like to unpack someone's story? Or is there, I mean, I'm sure there is an art of storytelling, but what is that for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's always figuring out what their why is and how quickly you can figure out their why, the more successful and efficient the production will go. If you can't really determine what their why is, you maybe need to take a step back and really dive deeper into the project and figuring out what their business is about.
Sure.
It's probably the hardest part about production is the pre-production and the storytelling and the preparation prior. It's something that a lot of people overlook. We certainly overlooked it at the very beginning stages where, you know, you get the contract and then you figure it out, you know?
I bet you've run into several situations where like companies will come to you, you'll get the contract going, and then they just expect you to create that story and absolutely. You know nothing about them to the extent absolutely. Of where they want to take it. And it's just like, all right, I get that I'm like the photographer and I got like the skill behind it, but you need to give me some guidance on what you're looking for.
Maybe we don't even really do that route. It's we'll figure out if you're almost worth our time, because if they're not passionate enough about their own business that they can't really give us, you know, here's a nutshell of what we want, then it's not the right fit.
Yeah. Well, it just takes more time.
Yeah. I mean, we're not saying we don't, but we try to find those really passionate companies that they want a video. They know they want a video.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know you guys shoot in the music industry. Is that some of your more, is that like one of your preferred industries to work with, or what's like an ideal client that you guys like working with?
I mean, I got into the music. Actually, another thing that we didn't really talk about at all was actually sorority videos. I got into sorority videos.
There you go.
All this relates to the music. I'll get to that in a second. But the sorority videos were driven a lot by like powerful like music to me. It was like a lot of, you know, because it's community. Like I try to show everyone kind of happy, you know. So music,
girls are getting their wings.
I was finding that the impactful music back then before I even like really got in the music industry. So okay. I was making like kind of like dope edits, you know, before I got into the music industry. But yeah, I got into the music industry because it actually was one of my biggest inspirations. Festivals, EDC, 2014 after movie, just showing the ginormous. I mean that stuff was just super impactful for me. So yeah, music festivals, you know, it was always a goal for me to like shoot a music festival, work with artists. And I mean, I could go into all the details of like how that all kind of came about, but I definitely succeeded in being in the music industry. But as far as today goes, still do it. Money's not great. There's a lot of competition, but, it's definitely not like our main focus, so to speak.
What were some of the, just sticking with the music for a little bit, what were some of those first clients that you grabbed, first artists that you grabbed that we were like, all right, I'm in it. I'm actually like working with people that are competing. And then you kind of worked your way up from there.
Yeah.
Yellow Claw, right?
I would say, that's a long story. And it kind of stemmed from Nime Schmack stuff, some of the music stuff. Yellow Claw 2014. That was kind of the first like, actually no, we missed the whole phase. The first artist I ever worked with, or like was around, so to speak, I wasn't working directly with them, was actually G-Eazy. And it was G-Eazy. And so how all that came to be is I actually was so kind of passionate about being around music and club and like hype stuff. I walked my ass into the local club and I said, what do I gotta do to shoot you know, every night, or you know, every night on the weekends, you know, to shoot some photos, whatever, and it was like $50. And so I did that for, you know, probably a semester. And during that semester, this is where the G-Eazy part comes in. The owner, Trevor, shout out Trevor, he called me and he was like, oh, I got this artist coming down for like, basically G-Eazy played at the local venue. They was gonna come to the club after and do like a little performance. And so me not really knowing, I had to Google him. I had no idea who he was. But I was so passionate about filming and like an opportunity to make something dope that I hit up anyone and everyone that moved at KU Filmmaking, or, you know, that department. And I got about 8 filmers there, and this is like what? Before any real filmmaking cameras were out. This was still had my Sony VG20, which is, you know, this big kind of clunky thing, and like the 5D Mark II, 5D Mark III era. So it was a bunch of kids. Just I said roll the whole thing, and I'll throw some screen grabs up right here of this Yeezy video.
I love how he's live editing
I know how it works. I know how it works.
Shoot to edit, baby.
Yeah, shoot to edit, exactly. But yeah, that was a Yeezy. That was a live recap. That was my second most watched thing on YouTube.
Damn.
It took me days to edit because I wasn't that knowledgeable in editing multicam stuff with 8 cameras on older computers. I was trying to play literally 8 feeds all at once and like rhythmically edit it, and I didn't figure out what a proxy was until a couple years later. So I was, you know, 3 seconds, you know, it starts to freeze up, you know, like just 8-minute edit, you know, 2 songs. So
damn,
that was crazy. But anyways, yeah, fast forwarding to more of the modern stuff, I mean, my first festival, you know, we kind of worked our way up in a local festival in Kansas called Dance Festopia. It's a pretty big one. You know, all the big names, Tiesto, Millennium, a lot of the big ones. But yeah, we did that every year for 3-4 years. That was kind of our big festival. But I mean, fast forwarding, I mean, I've done so many little music things that it's hard to like really pinpoint key ones.
I think the what we're looking for now, we like branded content very at the awareness stage of the buying process, the why and the inspiring, not necessarily the what, because there's a lot of video people that can like have someone sit at a chair and say, what do you offer? But there's only so much value that can portray. Mm-hmm. It doesn't move people, you know, and we always try and create content that'll really move people and get their skin crawling. Speaking of that, like 2 hours ago, we sent over a draft to a client of ours, and he sent us a Snapchat, shout out Landon, of just like him watching the video and just like his face is just like eye opening. And then he turns the Snapchat around and he's looking at his skin crawling. And that was like an hour and a half ago, 2 hours ago.
Dude.
So it's just like, that's what we like doing. That's the energy that we try and bring to the table. Project was really cool. It was at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Down in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Working on a branded content piece. And but so that's like what we're look to get out of a project or a client.
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, not all of them can be like that. A lot of them aren't like that. But that's what we strive for.
Mm-hmm. And so, I'm guessing that you roll with referrals a lot.
Absolutely.
That's kind of how you guys have been picking up steam, and the snowball kind of goes from there, is just getting that next person to give you word of mouth. Who were those kind of big influences on you early from like a mentor standpoint that kind of helped you be a North Star, or they were the North Star to you?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I mean, we have a lot of we have a lot of different, we don't have a whole lot of like, we need a video every month. Like, it's usually, you know, this person. It's a second connection. So like, it's, we know someone, and then their friend is the one who actually
But going on the question, like with the mentorship, like that's a hard question, because we haven't really had like a mentor that just guided us. That's like very.
I'm a self-taught YouTube university. I mean, for me, from like a filmmaking side, I mean, I spent years just on YouTube and just watching other people. There's only been one person that he was actually a wedding videographer in like 2014 who actually like showed me some things, and I'll never forget. I can't think of his name right now. Anyway, insert that now. He was one of the only people that kind of like taught me anything. It was like only a couple of days. I actually met him through Craigslist, as sketchy as that is. He was trying to buy one of my lenses, and we ended up meeting some neutral location, and he was dope, and we started doing some stuff together. But as far as mentorship, it's been trial and error. It's been, you know, and also not only trial and error, but just getting feedback based off of what posts are like doing well and like what got engagement and stuff like that.
Yeah. So is this a plug for us? Hey, like if you're in the video world with 20 plus years experience, like we'd love. yeah. to have a mentor in our lives.
Love that.
Links below to our contact page.
I'd love to learn. I don't. Yeah, I'm. I like to give value in both directions.
Nice, dude. That's a good little bit right there. I think we can use that swipe up campaign or something.
Yeah, swipe up.
Just that, you know. So you mentioned like, you know, filming for the wide, going more deeper on a brand. How do you? I mean, and Andrew and I are getting into this a little bit too, of like not devaluing like your talents or the things that you're great at. So for like you guys, how did you go into working these contracts through with other clients and like sticking to the price that you truly thought represented Brodsky Production?
Oh, that's the $1 million question I think every video creator deals with on a daily basis, is like, what's their number, what's their worth?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's kind of like the word of mouth thing goes. Like, if you work with someone and it's a $1,500 budget, chances are those two people definitely talked about maybe what their price was, and they kind of right. have an expectance to where, you know, they can expect. And then we bump it up every year, I would say. But obviously, Sam can speak more on the our number side of things. I'd be curious.
Yeah, well, to me, it's all about like planning your goals of like where you want to be in the industry and like where you think you currently are. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of video people that I know and I've helped kind of mentor. If you're expecting to make a lot of money at the beginning, like, don't expect it. If you're trying to get into the industry because you think it's cool and like it's really Instagram, like it's flashy and your Instagram clout goes up. Like, if you're really like interested in video, like, that shouldn't be your motivation. But going back to the money side of it is that, you know, if you set a goal that you want to charge $1,000 for a project in year one, and you set the goal that, okay, in year two, it's going to be $2,000. And year three, it's $3,000. Like, what more value, like, and experiences are you doing in year one that add value to like your clients in year two, where that justifies your rate going up, right? Like, we charge based off of like our experience, our equipment, and like our just general knowledge in business and in the video world, and how we can impact your business using video or your business or brand. Yeah. Yeah, it's all about just setting expectations with the client and yourself prior to the project starting. Because I've had so many, new video people that they go into the project and they think that, like, this is what they're doing. But then the client is like, yo, this is what I expected. Now the video guy is doing 10 times as much work. And the client is like, yeah, well, that's what I expected. So you have to really, you know,
lay out your sort of statement of work.
Yeah. Like, what's and that happens at very high levels. And we know this, I can't say the client, but we from a very high level to the very beginning videographer people that are just learning and just starting. And everyone like has to start somewhere. You just got to grind it out at the first year or two. And really even like 4 years. Like, don't expect it all to come like because of one – Instagram post of.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the biggest myth with video is, you post one video with some huge artist and then it's going to lead to, just naturally like, oh, like now Drake's going to hit me up. No, it's your network. It's you do one video for a smaller artist and then this is just speaking in general for music and Instagram, just the way all that works. Is you do one smaller video, they happen to be connected to some other manager, some other artist, and they put in a good word for you, and then it starts out at like, really low rate, and maybe they're coming through your local town, and, one thing leads to the next kind of thing. It's never like, oh, the manager needed a video, so bad of like this huge name, and like, but no one else has reached out to them. Like, that never happens. It's pretty much always the other way around. Someone's been reaching out to them for 5 months straight and like, oh, finally they get their shot.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that consistency always.
Every
time. It's insane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's like one thing that I've seen a lot, or what we're trying to get into a little bit is like looking ahead a little bit and seeing these different artists or,
even comedians is where I'm really looking at it and seeing these people coming to town and being like, okay, if I hit them up 2 months beforehand, I know that they haven't started their ticket promotion yet. So I'm going to hit them before, put it on their radar. Like, hey, do you guys need help promotion? Would you want to come on the podcast? That kind of thing. And just like, it's weird because when I first started trying to do that, it was just tons of kickback or no responses. And it was always because like, that wasn't a need that they had. You have to like catch them at the right time to really fulfill the need. And then they're going to be willing to work with you. As long as you have like that experience.
Value first, right?
Value first.
That's what you're about to say.
Yeah, exactly. I can tell. And I got to ask you, Ben, how thankful are you that Sam can just run the reins on there and you can just go shoot? It's kind of like you have like that, and just the same thing goes with you, Sam. Like you guys have that wall of trust and like, I just need to get him the job and then he'll deliver. And then vice versa. I just need to make sure that I deliver so then that Sam can get me the job the next time. And you guys have, I mean, it can't be easy being brothers, but at the same time, you got that built in trust going forward with that.
Yeah. I mean, Sam here speaking is like, cause I don't want to mix up this conversation a little bit, but like we both blend roles a little bit or more than we used to. Like I'm learning how to edit because I want to better understand him and how what it takes to edit. For him, I've been trying to teach him about like prospecting and like how important relationships are, even though that one, the first degree person that you're talking to may not be important at all, but their second and third degree may be super key. But We're trying to learn each other better so we understand our roles better.
Yeah, it's definitely like, I mean, going back to what you said about like, you know, the wall, and it's definitely it's a total blessing and a curse. And to a lot of videographers that may be watching this, like the grass is never greener on the other side. Like you might be thinking in your room right now, like, I wish I had a twin that like did all the hard shit. You know, no, it's, we definitely both work hard. I mean, it's not, you know, and we do a lot of projects because there's two of us. I'm not saying like, you know, we're one person, so to speak, just doing different jobs of one person. It's definitely, you know, it's building three people, so to speak, like two, yeah. You know, 1 + 1 = 3. Yeah, I mean, we're definitely really lucky to be so good at what, you know, in our areas, because you know, I've been trying to teach him sort of shoot a little bit, but it's not instinctual. You know, it's not, you can't teach instincts. So you know, I definitely have to be here, and I definitely need him.
I need Ben. Are you kidding me? Yeah, like he makes all my projects look good.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I'm spoiled.
Yeah. Speaking of instinct, it's my instinct to correct you when your mic's a little slouch. Can you pick up your mic a little bit?
Is it
catch the game vertical?
I keep, like, grabbing the
he needs a tripod. He needs a tripod
and
first.
Get him a tripod. Right, yeah.
And Ben, if you don't want to keep reaching over to grab your LaCroix, we built a mic mount that is also
he wants
a coaster.
To elbow.
Oh, he's elbowing it, dude. Yeah. Never mind, Ben. Continue.
Okay, I'll just keep reaching for it. Yeah. Well, now I sound better. I can hear myself now.
Hey, dude, he loves it now. Look at that.
You're in the mics.
So I had a question. Like, when do you guys like ever fight, and who would win?
I mean, there's
both
daily
like
arguments.
Yeah, I mean, at 3 in the morning when we have a deliverable due at 8 a.m. and like it's coming down to the wire, it can get a little heated in our office. But I mean, we don't fight. We've done everything important in our lives together. Like everything. Even college, like decision wise, it was like he was decided to go to KU. So I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to Mizzou or Madison. I'm gonna go to KU. You know, we've pretty much, you know, so we're very close. And we're lucky. Because we have two, but yeah, I wouldn't say we fight much. So
yeah, I'll be tuning into the Twin Week here. I'd love to hear other twins, you know, kind of stories and what they currently do in business and where they live, how they split. That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Tune in.
Yeah, we fight all the time. That's how we roll, though.
That's just how it works. Radical transparency is what Back Pocket's all about. Because if you don't have that, you're not getting anything done.
Yeah.
Put it that way, at least for us. I want to know, do you guys get annoyed, or are there any situations where, I mean, people obviously can't tell you apart typically. I feel like that's a thing for sure. That happened to me a million times. But is there anything where you have, like, you struggle with in terms of being a twin?
Yeah, I mean, identity is always like a hard one when he does something and then it affects you even though you didn't do anything, you know, that kind of thing. And you're like, well, what? But yeah, in high school, it was hard, very hard. We transferred from a private school, Waldorf school, to a public school, not knowing anyone, going from a class size of 15 people to 800 from 8th grade to 9th grade, and then people not even knowing your name. And then when they do figure out their name, they can't figure out which one. So then the tendency of, if you can't, embarrassment, like people are prone to, like, they don't want to be embarrassed, so they'll just not say our name at all, you know?
Right, right.
And then, you know, some people that were smart would catch on and be like, oh, just Brodsky or Brodsky, you know? Yeah. For you guys, Brodsky. You know? yeah, so that was like totally hard. I think I wrote a paper about it in high school, because like, what's the first thing you do when you meet someone? You figure out their name, right? And that's like the first step in a relationship. But if people are like hesitant to say your name, it's because of getting it wrong. It can be hard, but I mean, we have
definitely more positive than negative. It's a good icebreaker. You always got
Ben seeing all the benefits over here.
There's definitely negatives, but it's mostly positive. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Who doesn't
want
to be twin? But as far as like recognition goes, I mean, it was really, you know, I would say midway through college when people started really, we definitely started to look different. But I mean, insert photo here. Like, there's some photos where I can't even tell. I mean, I can't, like, before age 10, I couldn't. It's a blind guess.
You gotta
50-50.
You gotta flip the picture over, and my mom wrote, you know.
There's no more siblings besides you. It's just you two.
Us.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, when we were born, like, instantly, Ben's running left, I'm running right. They were done. Like, but we were great kids, actually, according to my mom. But
okay. You said left brain, right brain earlier. What is getting in depth on more? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, everyone has a tendency to be like more logical and conservative. And,
oh, gotcha.
Like on one side, and one's like creative. And I forget the exact attributes to left and right.
Right.
But we definitely have that. Ben's like a lot more on the creative side. And I'm more like, time is money. And we need to get this project going. And, you know, we just wasted 20 minutes. My mind sees that 20 minutes as like lost value.
And I'm just, you know, the energy in the room, you know, the vibe, like what did I pick up on, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is what you need both. You know?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So we kind of balance each other out.
Are there any times, like, I mean, for both of you, are there times where you like struggle communicating to each other because it's like you're not clearly understanding that 20 minutes is a big deal, or Sam's not understanding, like, dude, I got to get the right edit here. Give me 20 minutes.
I mean, that happens every day. I mean, I'm not working on a project for 3 days, and he's like, we got to get it done. And then I pick up some kind of, you know, vibe off YouTube or some kind of editing technique, and I'm like head down, you know, in it for 8 hours, and like the project's done. You know what I mean? Like, if I catch the right wave, that's huge.
Yeah.
And like most creatives know what I'm talking about, where it's just, you got to catch the energy. You know, and if you're not catching some energy, that means you're just doing blanket boring videos where it's just, you know, you got to have some kind of inspiration with it.
I was going to touch on that because, I mean, we're putting out 9 Instagrams a week, and a lot of it, we've built templates out for our Instagram posts. And at times it's like, I want to spend the hour to just learn a new feature that I can apply to the template and then just make that video just like inherently better. But at the same time, it's like, I'm giving myself a very stringent time frame to create these videos, and I'd rather just have the content out there rather than it looking nice, delivering the same message. So mm-hmm. Like for you guys, like, is it, do you ever play with that a little bit, or are you more like on the, like, I want to make this as creative and deliver for this brand as much as possible type thing?
Well, I mean, every video is that's in your mind, because like for me, it's more of a discussion of how is this going to help me sell in the future? Like, because if I'll put an extra day or two into something, if I feel like this is going to be a good tool we can use to get more business, you know what I mean? It's a portfolio builder versus this is just a reoccurring client. Like, that's what you kind of think.
Yeah, and if we're always striving to you know, one up our last projects. So kind of ties back to that rate thing, you know, where like, okay, what's justifying your rate increase from year one to year two? It's right. Like, well, what should be justifying is that you're getting better and your portfolio is showing it. So even in, you know, technically we're like in year like four or five, really only like 2.5, but it's a little blurred lines. Insert the song Blurred Lines now.
Dude, these guys get that. It.
Yeah. We're always thinking, man.
You're going to go show note this, and you're just going to put dings next to each one.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'll just
insert them all.
I'm going to insert every single one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's always, you know, how you bring in more value to the table, even if that means you're doing an extra day of editing for right. free. So
I got to ask this. How much time, on average, do you guys spend on editing?
I'd say it all correlates to how much preparation we do, right? Yeah. So the more preparation you do and you have a complete shot list that's to a T, editing shouldn't take that long. Yeah. But a lot of some of our, you know, I'd say 50% of our projects, there's a lot of decision making in the edit process. Mm-hmm. So it can range, you know, to, you know, 8 hours to a week and a half of 10 hour days, you know? Yeah. So really, it really depends, you know, obviously on the length of the video too.
Sure.
The variations between like if there's VFX, if there's like a voiceover, or if there's on camera people, or if there's a lot of like transitions that are involved, slow motion or fast motion. I mean, I could go on and on.
Right.
There's a lot of variables that I will determine before the project even starts to understand how long I think this edit will take. And even then, I mean, I'm a pretty damn good, you know, guesser at how long things take, but even, you know.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know. Because
revisions too, I mean. Yeah.
Didn't you guys just do I saw something on your story where you time-lapsed like an entire production night because you guys had to turn over. Yeah. It was like a challenge or something, right? Like a film challenge where you had 24 hours to put the whole thing together. What was that all about?
Yeah, it was a 48-hour film fest.
Damn.
Local to Minneapolis and around the world, actually, where we, you know, get a team and we get 48 hours to start and finish a film. And then each team gets like a criteria, like a genre, or you draw it right at 7 p.m. and then you get 48 hours from that moment. So it's very, you know, you got your writers, you got your editors, you got everybody in a room, you know, you gotta write that thing. And it's 48 hours straight. No one sleeps, pretty much. Damn. That's what that was. Yeah, we had a BTS guy had come in, Ian, shout out Ian. And
great dude.
Yeah, he got a lot of BTS. So that was probably one of his shots where it was around the clock, time lapse.
That's insane. Are you guys going to create a movie one day?
Oh, I have a tag. Well, to a movie about us or a movie in general?
A movie in general, like a documentary or anything.
Yeah,
like
no, documentaries are huge in both for me. I know I can do documentary shooting, like cinematography side. Oh. The story side, that I mean, I'm passionate about that kind of stuff, but it really has to hit home for it to be like passionate.
Dude.
But I could be a B-roll. I mean, you should see the content I got this weekend or this past weekend in Atlanta. I mean, this stuff is ESPN.
Can we insert that?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I actually was rendering a little draft to show you guys like what we were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll watch that after or maybe during.
Dude.
But yeah, no, that stuff's great. You know, shot on red. I mean, it's just like all the emotions, all the, everything. Everything's there.
Yes. Skin crawling.
Yeah, and ESPN's, I mean, speaking of that, you know, 30 for 30s and E60s, those really rich stories, those are huge inspiration. That's all I watch. I don't watch Glee or like, I don't, why did I say Glee? That's like,
you went 19, with Glee, dude.
Dude, you went with Glee. You just,
that's like literally like 2012. Maybe
the guy,
I racked my archive brain.
The guy that started Glee was from my high school. Maybe really? That's why. Maybe that's why you thought of it. You just looked at me and you're like, "This kid likes Glee."
I'm reading mine.
This kid's such a Glee kid.
Like that genre is what I'm trying to say. Just the right. You know, the the reality TV sort of like just waste of time. I listen. Right. I watch the juicy stuff. You know,
like Free What's Solo. I could see you guys doing like some Jimmy Chin type. That would be
that's
legit.
On my queue. I've been putting that off forever. I need to watch that.
Yeah.
Do you guys know things. Jimmy Chin? Or I haven't met, got
Do
a chance
to
meet him.
About?
Isn't he the filmmaker? I'm blanking.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
He's the one who makes. Yeah, he made that 26 hour one too. I think maybe.
Or 127
hours. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I just know him from Free Solo, and he's a Carlton guy. So we're hoping he's like, we keep just DMing him, and hopefully he bites one day when he's coming home to see his family.
He lives in Jackson Hole, which is like, sweet brag. That's, you're definitely never coming back to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a hard switch. But yeah, to answer it, one day when we're right.
You got to flip the mic.
You want to rotate the mic?
Yep.
Just move the actual top part. There you go. Dude.
There we go. Yep.
Wow. Dude, I just want to say this real quick, Ben. One of my, like, dreams is to make a ski documentary.
Yeah.
We got to do it. The stars are aligned. And literally, like, the one thing there was one day I was like by myself. Rarely do we all get time by ourselves. Just shout out to that real quick. But riding by myself, riding my bike around the lake, and I wrote down like the five things that I want to do with the next 5 years of my life, pretty much. And then the five things I'm doing now, but how much time I'm actually spending on it.
Right.
And the fifth thing that I wrote down after like comedy, podcasting, all this other stuff was to film a documentary. Like I want to do, I love telling that story. I think it's one of the coolest, most unique ways to unpack a single story, and it can be as small as, you know, maybe one person's experience in an hour of life, like Free Solo, or it could be as big as, there's lots
decade.
Of
I mean, yeah, you
can World War II.
Docs are endless.
They're endless, right? It's wild.
Just gotta convince people that the story needs to be told, and that they should give you a lot of money to do it. And that's kind of how docs go usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you're going out prospecting, what are kind of the things that, like you say, you like, I'm honing. These are the skills that I hone. These are the skills that I can, like, I'm a tier above the rest when you're trying to get those next clients, just out of curiosity.
That's a great question. I mean, I think we do a pretty good job of on the cinematography side, making a unsexy thing sexy. So I think that's something that we're really good at, or Ben, I should say, is really good at. But two, just trying to figure out their why and figuring out how do we get that message across, given like talent, locations, voiceovers, scripts, like producing the project. Is something we're really good at. I mean, as you're talking about a ski documentary, I literally in my head have three people that I'd love to bring onto that project, and my producer mind is just like click, click, click. Like those, that's something we like bring to the table. We just know a lot of people. We know how to get things done in a timely fashion. I mean, shout out my boy Bobby out in San Diego. That's where he started, was in ski filming. I hope he's watching this right now. But
shout out Bobby if you're on right now. Shout out Bobby.
Yeah. So it's just like, that those are the things like we bring to the table. We like to think we're creative and outside of the box, given the right boundaries, and given the right creative freedom. And of course, if we don't think that we have what it'll take, we know the right people to bring onto the project. The Minneapolis film community is pretty small. So when I'm sitting down with meetings directors, I mean, if I start name dropping and they start name dropping, like it's, we're going to know a lot of the same people.
I had a question about that. So I'm sure people are listening thinking like, oh, are these guys going to go to LA at some point? Are these guys going to limb the film dream? And I would love to ask, like, where do you guys see yourself? Do you want to go to that scene, or do you see something else on the horizon?
It's a hot topic. Yeah, it's a
very recently hot topic. Yeah, I mean, LA is absolutely gonna happen. It very recently was about to happen, and a few things didn't line up exactly right.
Well, we put this podcast on your calendar, so you know.
I had to stay in town. I had already booked a flight back now. LA to me is, it's sort of a legitimizing yourself thing. To me, it's kind of like New York. It's like if you're in New York and living in New York, like you are doing something right. Like you can't slack, you can't be behind New York. So if LA for me is, and this is how I view it, is it's sort of a way to be like, you know, are you gonna make it in this field or not? And I'm talking more in a traditional filmmaking way, the whole DSLR revolution way. You know, you can do what we're doing, you know, and pop up in any city and be sort of the DSLR revolution. But you know, you if you want to do the traditional filmmaking with a set of 150 every day kind of thing, 14-hour days, you know, LA is definitely the spot to do that. You know, be a nobody and soak up info from people who've been doing it for 50 years. So for me, you know, and this is why we almost very recently made the move, like this month, was I felt recently I kind of sort of plateaued within my area, which is cinematography, you know, cameras, big technical stuff. And I wanted to make a transition to keep learning, sort of
be the small
fish. I want to be the small fish. Yeah, I don't want to be like, I mean, it's a great thing to be like well known, you know, in an area that everyone's like, oh, I wish I was you kind of thing. But I want to be, you know, the small fish and learn and like be mentored, you know, because I was on a set last week with Under Armour and I was the nobody and I was so happy because I was sitting there like, whoa, like that's how you did that, or like that created that effect, or like you had that haze in this direction and did this, and like that made me really happy. So definitely in the next year, hopefully even sooner than that, I want to try it out for sure and just, you know, get my feet wet with other people, you know, just create a pond essentially as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. And that's like one of our goals, you know, mm-hmm. is to, you know, obviously work with more people. But here, you know, there's obviously not nearly as many people. Circles run very tight. And just, you know, frankly, the opportunity as far as being a freelancer, like individual, here is very hard compared to LA, where there's 160 job postings a day for associate producers, production managers, production coordinators, my title, Ben, camera ops, DPs, second ACs.
There's just, out there.
You know, so regardless of our decision to move to LA, we're still going to be producing projects and working on projects together. But the shift may focus on working with other crews, as individuals as well, and balancing those two. Just because, like, you know, knowledge is super important and getting uncomfortable. And the minute we feel that we're getting comfortable, we want to get uncomfortable. And that's where LA comes in, because you go to LA, you're going to be uncomfortable. Yeah. And not just with rent. Yes, you're going to be uncomfortable with $3,500 a month, you know, for two people minimum, right? Plus, we need an extra room just for our equipment, right? But that's why the decision this actually week, things didn't quite align up the way we wanted them. The offer wasn't quite there. But November, we'll see. Maybe next November, you know. We're still so young, man. As Gary Vee would say, if we fall asleep tonight and wake up in 5 years, guess what? We're young as shit.
Yeah,
we're still young as shit. So we've been able to do a lot in the last couple of years, but that's definitely not stopping us for sure. So
I love that take, because I'm really curious. I've never really looked into leaving the Twin Cities for right now. Deck and I are honing in, dominating the sandbox, if you will. But like giving that thought and putting in that time and effort to when you do make that leap, when you make that transition, that you're ready to go, your full forces, and just like, all right, we're just gonna pack our stuff up and go. We, you know, that's not how you win in those situations. You really have to put the thought into it. But kind of transition into the back pocket core questions here. This is what our first question that we ask. It's our favorite question. It throws people off from time to time. It's the average quality question. Something you do well at times and other times not so well. At the end of the day, it's your average quality. So Brodsky brothers, who wants to start? What's your guy's average quality?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll start it off. I mean, basically, I guess my average quality would, you know, man, that's a good one. I would say, you know, filmmaking, because, you know, you can be really great in one area and, you know, and in other days I can be really bad in some area. Like, you know, my sound, you know, like, what was I doing there? I would say there's really no perfect way to make a film. So, you know, I would say my average quality is filmmaking is kind of cliche, I guess, as that sounds.
That's awesome.
You know, there's definitely no perfect way to make a film. So, and this is a good quote just for everyone out there. There is no roadmap to filmmaking. It really is, you know, trial and error, and getting feedback and just, you know, figuring out as you go. There's no roadmap.
Mm-hmm. And especially with, like, yeah, YouTube university mentality, hindsight's 2020. You don't know what you didn't know what you were doing a year ago. When you look back at those films, you're like, oh, I was really fucking around on that, and I didn't do it how much I wanted to. But now you know, and you put yourself out there to make that leap, which is dope.
Yeah. I love the humility aspect, too, of it, where it's like people tag you as a filmmaker, and yet you're still sitting here like, I still have so much to learn.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's like a great point across the boards, is like everyone who's a filmmaker is always trying, they should be anyway, just trying to strive for that next goal. I mean, I have people that, like, I was at a concert this weekend, they recognized me, and like I had no idea who they were, and like I'm sitting here like, what, you recognize me? Like, I'm trying to get to here, like, and you're looking up to me, like, what the heck?
Yeah, but it is nice to have that happen every once in a while, just to like pep you up feeling. Like, okay, I'm like doing something good here.
Yeah, and I'm always the one behind the camera, so it's cool to be like, oh, you recognize me, like I'm a person.
No, I love that, man. I think that like ties right into exactly why you guys want to be uncomfortable. Like, it just makes sense. Like, Andrew and I have really never thought about it yet because we haven't dominated our sandbox. We're still looking for those next big guests or those bigger opportunities to like get us there. So that's what we're just in the thick of it, trying to, we're still a small fish in this small pond of Minneapolis. But I love that, man. Sam, what's your average quality, bro?
Yeah, I mean, as Ben was speaking, I came up with two answers. And I guess one that was really random, but I'd say like sleeping. And let me explain. Because so the role of a producer is you don't get a lot of sleep. You're always worrying about something, that something went wrong, or some project that's not quite as far along as we like want it to be. So like you do lose sleep at times, but what's kind of like humbling is that it makes me like think more about the way I eat and the way I like wrap around my production business, like, and how I like move around the very crazy hours and, oh, hey, I need like 10 photos by tomorrow for the Washington Post. It wants, you know, they wanted a couple photos. Like, so it was kind of like random answer to it, but I'd say like I'm a pretty average like sleeping and working around my schedule. It's a really hard question, honestly, to answer. And I'm sure a lot of people have stumbled up, but that was my first thing that came to my thought.
I love that. It is. I mean, it's just the listening to like your kind of response was it what it sounds like is your schedule is not consistent. It's not very regimented.
Yeah, if like, it is, you're not working hard enough.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, at every
soul.
Yeah, at every level. Sleep. Yeah, and I guess I should say at every level, but at the sense like, okay, that some producers that do like one project a month and like, you know, they've like completely made it and it's, you know,
how
a
much
big
would
deal. But I mean, when your rate's you know, 10,000 a day, I mean, and that's what directors and producers are, you know, they're 20% of a half a million dollar production.
Whoa,
there you go. And I know people like that, but I'm nowhere near that at all. Yeah, but one day, baby,
stay hungry is what.
Yeah.
How many? How much money would you have to get paid, or if you were to achieve 8 hours of sleep for 7 days in a row, how much would you have to get paid to do that? And not even that. Could you achieve it?
Be
productive. Like, just say, cold turkey, Sam, you got to go 7 days in a row, 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah, like,
could you do it?
Yeah, I could do it for a project that would like float me per se, or just in general, just like a number.
Like, if I'm just gonna hire you, like, knowing your average quality is like sleep, I'd be like, all right, Sam, like, I'm not hiring you onto my project unless you get 8 hours of sleep during the whole production. Could you do it?
Yeah, I mean, depending on how big the project is, the bigger the project, I mean, the more worries more and strenuous. The more variables are. Mm. I mean, it's just this is the way it works. I mean, I was helping out on a Blue Cross Blue Shield commercial, and holy wow, there was not much sleep involved on the production side for the production supervisors and coordinators. I mean, it's
that's insane.
I mean, when you get people flying in from other countries to be a part of a project, I mean, and your ass is on the line,
can get
not much sleep.
Yeah, it can get, but you know, we're, you know, figuring out how you balance your life is what I'm trying to figure out at a small scale. So when I am at that quote huge level, large level, you know, I am able to, you know, sleep 8 hours a day.
Or sure, it doesn't have to be eight because I don't even get 8 hours either. So, yeah. What was your second thing? You said you had two average qualities.
Oh, yeah, I was getting at like with like editing. Like, I'm an average editor. I'm not good at it, but Ben kind of humbles me because I look at him and he's like so much better at me.
Sure.
That it's like, wow, like he's really good at what he does. So yeah, I don't know. That was something like average at.
Yeah, you know? But it, in your position with Ben being able to help you, I think you're going to be heading up and to the right consistently because he's always going
to
be
guiding. When you have YouTube University to your left of you in the office, yeah. Ask him questions all the time. Yeah.
Up and to the right. That's the way we go.
Absolutely,
dude. And then the next question is, what's in your back pocket? So this is something when pressure becomes stress and anxiety's rising, you reach in your back pocket to overcome these situations. These could be in situations when you're on set, or it could just be behind the scenes type things.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Ben, right? I always have him to rely on, right? I mean, you know, not many people are blessed with a twin, and we talked about this earlier, but, you know, I can go to him for anything if in need or in stressful, you know, situations. But I'd say second, I mean, perseverance. At the startup of any business, you get told no a lot. So just being having that mentality of like, I'm going to keep trying, I'm going to keep trying. That's another thing that I'd say is in my right cheek. Ben's in my left.
That's clever.
Hey, Ben, is Sam sitting in your back pocket?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to. I'm sitting
here. He forced you into that answer. I don't know if that we should ask Ben first. You know?
I mean, it's a pretty good answer. I would definitely, like, agree. Yeah, he's in my back pocket for sure. I mean, if it's, you know, some kind of put out some fire or something, you know, go handle XYZ while I'm still shooting or trying to finish up something. Like, it's for sure. For sure, back pocket.
Right on. I freaking love it, man. So, you know, you guys have been talking about, you know, more or less just, you know, everybody. It's pretty freaking cool to hear you guys are shooting with, you know, Under Armour, Blue Cross, Blue Shield. You know, you guys just know everybody all around the world. Casey Neistat. You guys shot with Casey Neistat?
I did that. It was a little Instagram cut down type piece.
Really?
Hitting a slip and slide type thing.
Yeah. It was in New Jersey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wish I could have. I wasn't actually there for it, which was annoying, but my buddy was in it, so I edited him.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So with that being said, you know, we're looking for a challenge. So we want to ask you guys, you know, like, is there anybody that you guys would love to see on the podcast?
Yeah. So, ooh, that's actually really hard.
A lot of people.
I don't know. I mean, if you can definitely get the guy that you mentioned, Jimmy.
Jimmy Chen?
For that sure. Would be really cool, and I think that's like better than the challenge that I can think of right now. I mean, I'd love, my buddy just started a fitness brand, little personal training business a couple weeks back. Maybe hit him up in 6 months, see where he's at. I lived with him for 4 years back in college.
What's his name?
Elliot Levine.
Okay.
Kid grinds harder than anyone I've met. But that could be someone that just popped out of my head. Sure. He like started his Instagram like 2 days ago, and okay. And he was like, hey, like, should I start it? And I was like, dude, you got to start somewhere.
Exactly. Send it.
Yeah. Which, I mean, speaking of starting Instagrams, been working on a little Instagram for our company over the last couple weeks that we're gonna launch pretty soon here.
There you go.
You know, just another platform for people to check out our stuff. So
is that the Broski Productions page that you're?
Yeah. Okay. We're just gonna launch a little Instagram. I think there's like, I haven't told anyone. I think this is probably the first like actual announcement, but sick. I think there's like 200 people that like found it somehow on Instagram and followed it.
Yeah.
And it's on private and there's like no posts, but definitely follow. Go follow, because like I've been working on, I've learned Photoshop, so I've been like designing this Instagram launch, and I'm like pretty proud of it, right?
There you go, dude.
I mean, if you give me a follow, that would be amazing. Mm. Now in pre-launch stage, so look for that in the upcoming weeks,
in the show notes as well.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. We got you. Is there anyone in the Twin Cities that we could get on our nice sectional couch that you'd want to see?
Oh, I'm trying to think. I might like get back to you and like paste it in.
No, that's fine.
That's a really good question, because I want someone that would provide you guys a lot of value to that we could connect, because you know, we do know a lot of people.
We're all about it, man.
Right at this moment.
I'm trying to think of someone like, you know, kind of Minnesota grown or something like that. Might have to do some searching.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
No worries. We'll circle back. We'll
definitely circle back.
That's how we create a breadcrumb trail, and Andrew and I just go and pick up the bread pieces of all the different people that are challenged to come on the show. That's how we grow.
No, I love it.
I think you're coming to a point where you know, you're at a loss for words, because we've been peppering you with questions and you've been crushing it all day. I mean, I think our questions have been pretty good, but your guys' answers have been phenomenal. So thank you. But we would like to give you the opportunity to ask us some questions. If there's any questions that you thought of throughout this this hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, who's the first person you interviewed on the show? Just kind of curious. So what kind of your beginning journey?
The first person we ever interviewed was one of our good friends, Mal Jensville, just like a girl that we've known for like 3-4, or at the time it was like 2-3 years. She was just like kind of the more talkative, like more confident, cool girls that we knew. So we brought her on to just peppered her with like the most knucklehead questions.
Valentine's Day special.
The Valentine's Day special brought her on. That's episode one.
And then episode two was a hitter with a Chilean kicker, football kicker on our football team. He's just a transfer from somewhere in Chile.
Yeah, Brian Steinsbier. And we really wanted to interview him because his like Chilean accent is the thickest ever, like most thick thing of all time.
Yeah.
So we knew that was good for podcasting.
We had video at that time, because he's Chilean, but he's also like blonde and just like does not look like he's from Chile.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would have been priceless. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Some of that stuff though, man. Like I'm scared to hit play on some of those podcasts because I'm like, I don't even know what we were talking about back then, man. Holy shit.
You on that. You should get him back in here round two.
No, absolutely. He ended up starting his own podcast when he moved back to Chile.
How about sports?
Yeah,
but so now he's slanging tequila, I think.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was kind of a barrier one, too. He was like, yeah, I started this new podcast called Sobre Mesa Podcast, and I hit play, and it was all in Spanish. I was like, look, dude. I get podcasts are for everyone, but this is like a serious barrier to entry. Like you can't, if it's in another
language, I'm out.
Yeah. We can't do nothing with that, dude.
Well, Google Translate one of these.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. You could definitely do that.
AI, man.
Siri.
It's taking over things, including even in the video production space, man. AI for in editing, you know, there's a function job role called a rotoscoper, and you know.
Yeah, that's pretty techy, but I mean, just.
Go on. Right,
it's wild. Yeah, AI is taking over. But I wanted to ask you guys another question too. Like, where do you see the podcast going in the next 3 years? I know a lot of people have probably asked that, but also, what's like stopping you from like that? Where you want to be in 3 years or so?
I like the what's stopping you. What's the resistance?
Yeah, because I want to help. That's my producing background, right?
For sure.
You know, what is stopping us, dude? Like, I mean, I guess the, like, our other jobs and the things that the other, you know, time is money, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other things that I'm spending time on that I don't see as much value in, sure, that would probably be the obvious thing. But I like to just give ourselves credit, man. We've been doing this for 2.5 years as a side gig. We're pumping out 3 podcasts a week on nights like this. Like, we've done it for so long to now any idea that we have, and I'm sure you guys are just like this, where it's like, you can think of the craziest idea and still find a way to build a roadmap to it. So when you're telling me in 3 years, like, I haven't even really thought that far yet, but in 3 years I could be like, okay, Andrew and I, we want to be, you know, traveling the world, interviewing the biggest names, unpacking their story, doing exactly this, but just scaling that impact everywhere. Like, as crazy as that for me to say that to some stranger, to Andrew and I, it's just like, okay, let's build this out. We can do this. And that kind of confidence, I hope I'm speaking for you, is just like, dude, that is, we can do it. I have so much confidence in us to achieve that, knowing that it's going to be so wildly average in year 1, 2, and probably 3. But at the end of the day, man, it's going to be, that's where we want to go, to the moon.
We've been going at this for now 2.5 years and just started recording analytics for over a year now. First year and a half, we had no idea how many people listened, how many people hit play. We just did it
for the first year and a half. That's crazy to think about that.
And then in May of 2018 was when we first like actually started tracking downloads, And then in season three, we finally have like this consistent, like a system that we can look at the numbers and actually like dissect them and see where what's hitting and what's not. And we've doubled our downloads since then. So just like focusing on that and moving forward in slow, monotonous ways, but just caring about what we're doing, is that's the goal, because we don't know where we want to take it, but we just know we love doing this, and dominating the sandbox is what we're going to do for now. It just,
I love it, boys.
Yeah. We just have fun doing it. That's the best thing.
That's it's the key. Most important part.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise you'll burn out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
thanks for asking absolutely. That, Sam. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Flipping it back on you though, like, where 3-year plan for Brodsky Productions? What do you guys want to, you guys want to do? What's stopping you?
Definitely LA. I mean, I definitely see at least a 2-3 year growth spurt in LA soon. So
sweet.
Yeah, just getting on bigger projects and just learning more tricks is what keeps me going, you know, passionate.
Yeah, yeah. And just finding more clients that we work with well, on a consistent basis.
Yeah, the recurring client
that we just vibe with. Yeah, recurring is always great. Not everyone, you know, can afford that. Yeah, I mean, LA is definitely in the future, man. Yeah,
I love that.
I mean, we you know, truthfully, we have friends that are moving there, and they're, you know, starting to build relationships there, and are out there. So it's, you know, next step for us is, makes it a lot easier for us once we move there to have.
Absolutely.
Send them on the front lines and, you know, take those sword wounds to the arms and legs and let get chopped off. And then you swoop in and be like, all right, I got some extra arms for you.
To some extent. Yeah. And we'll give them that breath of fresh air. Yeah. So,
I'm curious on how many times you guys shoot some solid footy and you send it to them. They paid for it. Everything's going great. And they don't know what to do with it. And it just like sits in the back of their closet. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, dudes, like, I just delivered this awesome stuff for you. And they struggle with the distribution, because you guys don't deal with distribution at all. It's just kind of getting to them.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about distribution a lot. That's like a big piece. Cause like, if you're going on Instagram only, we're going to be talking and having conversations about, are we shooting this 16x9 or 9x16, AKA vertical. Right. But I mean, there is one client in particular where we delivered an incredible piece, and it's in around an event, so they'll probably use it for next year.
Okay.
But they also have like a ton of stuff going on. But I'm just like, let's get that baby going. Let's just see, you know, you might as well post it now and later again and start putting ad dollars for it later. But I mean, there's some people that they're very successful, and they just feel like they need content but aren't relying on it, right? So it just depends on like how much they like really need it, right? Because if you have this core audience of 1 million followers that are like not cult followers but are like really into your brand, like, yes, you're trying to grow, but some aren't like desperate for exposure and getting that like awareness of what your company is about and the why. You know, and the team structure too. You know, maybe they're just lacking someone in the team to be able to utilize that.
To push it out. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, what do you think about, like, you know, you just mentioned Instagram, but you can just touch on that. Maybe just the filmmaking space in general. Where is this going? Because honestly, I've seen it triple in size. We've had people on this show that, like, just, like, look at Soda Boy for an example. You guys know Soda Boy?
Oh, yeah.
Picked up a camera 3 years ago and was just like, I like doing this. Oh my God, I love editing. Okay, let me just hit up a couple girls on it and let's see where this thing goes. Found his own brand. Now he's over almost 200K. But like, that's one example of probably hundreds of thousands of different people. But knowing those last 3 years in the space,
is that sustainable? Is that where like this industry's heading?
Where's it going?
Oh, that's like the $1 million. I actually, when you were talking about like in the next 3 years, one of my like current kind of projects that is, it's on my mind but I'm not like sort of producing it quite yet, is I want to document the change of all of this Facebook, all this Instagram. Because, you know, if I were to, you know, turn the camera around right now and interview you about, you know, what's your daily use? What's your, you rely on? And I just like ask you these just day in the life questions. And then I come back once a year and I start to see where those trends go. Like, I just, we have so much power right now to do catch up while it's kind of still young technically, you know, and then you know, just track it and see where it goes. I'm super curious about that question.
Especially and just like to build off that a little bit, like it's one thing to like, with the organic side of everything, understanding like, you know, yeah, you create these great videos, you post it out, as long as you have like you said, Sam, like that cult like following, like you're going to see some sweet engagement. But now Andrew and I have been getting into the weeds in this a little bit, is like the paid side of all this social media. And if you have time, go watch The Great Hack on Netflix, and talks about Cambridge Analytica and how they used Facebook ads and all these different things to like polarize people and political movements of tons and tons of people. Andrew, you can go in it more if you want, but the idea is anybody's got this power now to put money into Facebook ads and then create a following and show your brand to the exact person that you need to see it.
Yeah.
So like, how does that, I mean, how would that even tie in? Especially, I mean, with content creation, people need that content in order to push their brand. Otherwise it's nothing.
Yeah. It's huge. I mean, go look and Google how House of Cards was used, using the big power of data, right? House of Cards is a household name. Everyone knows House of Cards is. Yeah. It's a great show. And it was founded and made based off of data. They simply, and it's genius. All they did was take the number one genre that was trending on Netflix, the number one actor on that people were engaging with, and countless other variables, and they just took all the variables, put them into one script, and boom, they had a TV show that was incredible, or a show that was incredibly successful. Definitely check out that, because in our industry, it's huge. Data is huge, but that's on a very large scale. We're not fortunate enough to have like a ton of data on our videos that our clients like show, so then we can like go and manipulate that data to replicate. But we have some, right? So we still are able to use some of that. But the number one thing for us is a good story will replicate and share itself. Our first viral video was that KU video, that four-year documentary, right, about the university life, and there was zero paid ads, and it would have costed $30,000-$40,000 to create the effect that it did, and we did it completely organically at zero. So if you have a good story and you're able to tell that good story, it can reach so many people.
That's key.
But yes, you definitely need both, especially if you don't have the talent and resources to understand how to like derive a story and tell a story. Then you're definitely going to want to rely more on that paid side. That was our like first big exposure of understanding how powerful a story can be, and if it can relate to a specific audience that you want, and it has that objective, and it's not trying to have 10 objectives. Like, we had one objective, right? Tell the story of what it's like being a KU student and the traditions that go with being at the University of Kansas. And it did exactly that, and people were literally crying over that video. And people from all over the country.
The basketball team, actually, I mean, I'm telling you, everyone knew about that.
There was articles written in the paper about it.
Articles, and not only that, but it was shown in like every classroom, like all the marketing.
Wow.
Which unfortunately for me, it kind of sucked, because I posted it about a week or two after graduation, so I don't think I was around really
for the impact.
Maybe I was. Yeah. So I didn't really get to see it in classrooms the following, you know, semester when it came around again. But yeah, I mean, the basketball team wanted their own little cut for, you know, to use it. The assistant basketball coach called me and was like, yeah, could we like get some of this for, you know, recruiting purposes? And like, Kansas basketball is like
cream of the crop.
It's the top.
Best. Oh, but basketball was founded in Kansas. Yeah, the Constitution of basketball is in.
We have our
people,
own.
People say Indiana. Yeah. It was founded in.
Everybody claims it, but we own the rules. So we got that.
I've actually never heard Indiana. Though.
I've never heard Indiana. I've heard Duke. I've heard. Was ESPN about it?
Yeah,
you should definitely check that out.
There's a 30 for 30 for it. Yeah. Check out that storytelling.
Oh yeah,
I think what's cool too is with the power of social media and this ultra uber connectivity that we all have, is now we're able to see stories of everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
And that and like everybody's got kind of their own unique story, and we found that out just by interviewing a lot of these quote unquote average people that end up becoming or end up you un, end up finding out that these people are not average people. These are extraordinary dudes, right? Like you guys are behind that this KU video that went viral, but people prior just looked at the names like Sam and Ben Brodsky, like, oh, good for these guys, right? But like there's so much more to it. I think it's super cool. Like, and that's where I kind of think the industry is going, is there's just going to be so much more of a need for guys like you who are super passionate about telling that story.
Yeah, it's a huge need.
And I think, yeah, and I think people are going to start to come around to this more vulnerable, this fleeting, or not fleeting, just rise of vulnerability and like wanting to put themselves out there more.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just my takes though.
Those are good takes, man.
Good takes.
Hey, we appreciate your guys' time, and we appreciate you guys sharing your story with us.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, wait, do we have one more question?
Oh, that's right.
I'm in.
Final question.
Shit. Yeah. We almost blew it.
Yeah. One final question.
Geez. This is a lot of pressure here.
You guys ready? What'd you learn today?
Oh, man. Well, I learned a little bit about being better on podcasts, you know, how to hold the mic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for being, like, producers, you guys are, like, terrible.
Yeah, podcasts we've never done, man. We've never done a podcast. Well, Ben's done one year or two back ago, but I've never been on a podcast. This is my first time, and it was awesome. And I'm down to do another one at any point and any time. And maybe, you know, we could do a Billie Eilish on it, and or you know how she like answers her own question.
Mm, yeah.
Like as the video's going, and then she's looking at herself and being like, "Oh man, I said that then." Man, I want to do one of those.
That would be great. Would be awesome. Like just a little Sam roast.
Yeah, dude, and be like, what was he saying, man? But, you know, in general, though, like, love these conversations. I'd love to dive deeper into your documentary about skiing and whatnot. I mean, that stuff just makes me tick.
Yeah, I want to. So,
but, yeah, I mean, what did I learn? I mean, you guys are, I already knew you guys were amazing. We've done, you know, hung out multiple times. But, like, yeah, you guys are great what you're doing. And I know for a fact in the next 3 years, like, this thing's going to be 10x, not double the downloads, 10-20x. It's just all about the grind, right?
So of course
that's what it just comes down to. And having that one break, one break, man, like for us, one break, right? Gets that traction, that portfolio piece. That's what you show people when they want to be on the podcast or whatever. Who have you had or what clients have you had? And like we initially, you know, in our first startups, first couple years, like we didn't have that, like, oh, who have you worked with? But yeah, now we do. So it's just that one break, man. Yeah, you guys have already had so many people on it, man. I'm always listening.
Yeah, for sure.
Churn and burning, baby.
Churn and burn. Yeah, absolutely.
It's huge. Mm-hmm.
All right, boys. Well, one hell of a conversation. Thank you guys for coming on.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, guys. Time.
That's a wrap. She could never pay someone else to say what she's trying to get across to you. She's a stargazer, and you can see the look in her eye. She's a dream chaser. She's made up her mind. Just watch her now. There she goes. She says, I'm gonna have to try and catch her now before she's gone.